Okay, hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WFIU. We're on Facebook Live.
Hold on.
Okay, hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor.
I think it's working.
I think it is.
This is our first time, so just be patient with us as we move through. We have Mayor Hamilton here. It is the third week of the month, and as always, we meet with Mayor Hamilton in his office in City Hall, but today we welcome you to our newsroom here in Bloomington. And thank you for doing Ask the Mayor Live on Facebook.
Thank you, Joe. It's nice to see you again in your studio, your home, in the newsroom. It's kind of fun trying this new thing out.
We would love to submit your questions, comments. I'll be keeping an eye here. We have Tyler, our producer. He'll be keeping an eye as well and throughout the show. And even if you're watching this later, go ahead and submit your questions, and we'd love to, we'll ask them to you next time
we
get to see you.
Great.
And I will say we did receive a lot of questions last month in February, and we kind of ran out of time and we were getting through those quickly. So we hope that we will be able to have spend more time, a little bit longer than we normally do, to get a little bit more in depth with some of these questions.
Great.
I wanted to start with the convention center, and then, like I said, we'll keep checking our feed to see if anyone else questions in.
Sure.
To our show, but let's start with there was a stakeholder and public meeting just a week or so ago. Despite all the planning going to those meetings, I feel like the convention center project is really just beginning. It's been a long process so far. So what did we miss out during the stakeholder meetings?
Well, you're right, Joe. It's we've been working on the convention center now pretty diligently for a couple years, actually, moving toward this. It is still early in the process, and in many ways, what is really intensively beginning right now is the design, the engagement with the community to talk with, think about, analyze what should this convention center do, how should it perform, how should it function, what should it look like, where should it be situated exactly, and all those things. And so the meetings that were held, I think the week before spring break here, early in March, were involved, I think, about 200 people that were coming through sessions led by the architects. So we've selected an architect, a couple architects, one from Kansas City, one from Indianapolis, and they went through a big competitive process to be selected. And they hosted these meetings, inviting a whole bunch of stakeholders to come in and talk generally about their view of this of the convention center. Now, there's a big new step that's going to be coming in mid-April. I think about April 16th to the 18th, I believe, will be kind of wide open design charrettes. So this is, public is welcome and will be invited to these as they were in the previous meetings. And you can do all this online, by the way, if you want to comment on, give positions.
Because the scope of all this is that, or the point of all this, that the scope, the size, I mean, we're talking everything about this really hasn't been decided.
That's right.
The layout, the site design. So what did the stakeholders, were you able to be there, part of any of the stakeholder part? What did they contribute?
I was a part of that, and then I heard some of the reporting out, and I don't want to prejudge this. I think what we heard from the stakeholders was a number of different things. People cared a lot about what this facility is going to look like and how it kind of represents our community, both for use inside the community and for the, you know, we have 2 million visitors a year come to Bloomington, and how it represents us to them. People cared a lot about its kind of connection to the community. They didn't want a convention center that's kind of walled off and its own thing. I think a lot of people expressed the importance, and I agree with that, of having a convention center that really pulls people from the convention center into the community and that welcomes people from the community into the convention or conference center. There were issues of how big it should be, and of course that's driven in part by the money, the funding stream that we've got. There's a lot of concern to make sure we're thinking for the future. Some of us, as we look at this, we may not be able to get everything we want right now. In fact, we probably won't be able to get everything we want right now. So planning for future expansions, just like this is an expansion of an existing convention center. But I'd also just say we are early in the process, and so we want a lot of people to feel welcome in mid-April to come and help think about what it should be like. Do we want volleyball tournaments there? If so, you got to design it with a high enough roof, you know. Do we want big banquets there? If so, how big a banquet center? Do we want do we want conventions that will have a lot of delivery of heavy items? Well, you got to think about the loading bay and where people come through the community and all that. And there's a hotel piece to it as well. So there's a lot of moving pieces.
Well, and I was able to sit in on the public part of it, mm-hmm. and produced a story on that. And it seemed like a lot of the public input, again, I only sat on three tables, but were, how does this convention center fit into the residents who live here? Which I think is maybe, is that different to what the purpose of a convention center is?
Well, so we know, somebody, I liked one of the descriptions somebody gave of the convention center, saying it's like the city's living room. So we want everyone in the city to feel like this is our living room. It is a place where we do have banquets of nonprofits that have big fundraisers or events there or summits or those kinds of things. So part of this is for us as community members to have new ways to meet and engage. But a lot of it, of course, is also for people who are coming to town for meetings, for conventions. So it's both purposes, really. It's kind of our living room, but in the living room, you host people from outside too, right? So
right.
It's got to serve both purposes.
So when people say, you know, we'd like to see shops or co-working, mm-hmm. public space, but that doesn't, in your mind, doesn't take away from what a convention center is?
No, it doesn't. I think it's what we talked about, where I think there's a strong desire for this convention conference center to really engage deeply back and forth with the community. Like, when you come to a convention in Bloomington, we probably want you to eat out a lot, not just eat in the convention center. We want you to find entertainment and get to know our community, which probably means there'll be a mix of things in the center that will pull people in. There's talk about possibly a Sports Hall of Fame, possibly some restaurant or food truck access, or maybe some arts-related activities that would be in the center. But a lot of what we want is to have kind of a wide open feel. When you're in the center, you're in Bloomington. We're fortunate that it's so close to downtown. So and I think we feel visitors will enjoy being that close. It's right on the Beeline Trail. It's just a block from the square. So we really want a convention center that's dynamic, active, and when you're here, you're in the whole city.
And then once that next step is done that you mentioned in April, is that when the beginning of finding a hotel developer to come in and be part of this project?
Well, we're still working with the county on that. My view is we need to do an open that door up to see what hoteliers are interested in. That needs to happen soon, because you really want the convention center designed with a hotelier, ideally, because they need to work in synergy together. So that decision, I think, will need to be made pretty soon. And after the April meetings, with that kind of input, then the architects will go back into their rooms and they'll start looking at options. They will come back to what we have as a community steering committee. That's 9 people, that's a mix of representatives from all kinds of different views, to review design options. And we'll have to start looking at cost estimates and financial realities and where it's located and what property and all that. So there's a lot of work to do. This is probably about a 3-year process from here to opening.
And that, and just like you mentioned, that steering committee, that will happen the same way as Convergence Architect was designed for the hotel.
Uh-huh, I think so. We haven't decided all that. But the steering committee is a really good group of voices representing different viewpoints that's been helpful so far, I think, to move the process along.
I wanted to get your take on this recent state Supreme Court decision about rental property owners, and that in Bloomington and West Lafayette can no longer charge rental fees greater than $5 per tenant. Now, this was after a state law in 2014 that capped rental registration, but it carved out Bloomington and West Lafayette, and actually Hammond, but then they took out Hammond, and they're the ones that ended up suing. So how will this, and maybe you want to kind of go back and describe how this, maybe give us some numbers in terms of what Bloomington charges and how this will affect
sure.
the city.
So I haven't looked at the opinion, and my lawyers are looking at it, the city lawyers are looking at it, so I can't give you a complete analysis of where we are. It's concerning in one level because Bloomington, as you mentioned, Bloomington and Lafayette have been allowed to run rental inspection programs. We inspect every year 7,000 or 8,000 apartment units to make sure they're safe, habitable, decent housing, that you can get out the windows, that the fire alarms, smoke alarms work, that the electric outlets are properly grounded and all that kind of stuff. And that's really important because we have a lot of renters who come in and out of town, and we want to be careful that they're all protected and not having any landlords providing unsafe habitation. That inspection program costs us money. We have half a dozen inspectors who work every day on that. I'm concerned, I don't yet know for sure whether this ruling means we can't charge. What we do now is charge something in under $100, but close to that for inspections, which you get every 3 to 5 years. And that's important to have the apartment owners help pay for the inspection program. I don't yet know whether this decision stops that from happening. If it did, I'd be very concerned because that means we have to come up with money from our general fund to support this very important program. I do not want to see fewer inspections. It's important we find violations and we get them corrected, which protects our public. So if we were not able to collect the inspection fee, which is a little different from the rental fee, so that's what we have to figure out the impact of that. That would mean we'd have to make it up with general tax money. Again, I would say I'm committed to figure out how to do that because I do not want to stop the safety inspections that we do, but it's a concern.
Was it special treatment to give Bloomington and West Lafayette that break?
Well, I guess I would say we were grandfathered in. We had that inspection program before the state passed a law that I personally would think is a bad law, because the law that stops cities from having an inspection program, why is the state stopping cities from having that kind of program? If the residents of that city say it's important for us to protect our public, that was a bad law, I think. Now, when they passed the law, they got enough pressure, I think, from university cities that say, look, we have thousands and thousands of young students coming here, maybe the first time renting an apartment. They may not be experts in figuring out how to keep an apartment safe, and they're in and out quickly. So I think it's smart to let us have that program. I'm sorry they don't let anybody else in the state have that program.
Does this then, in a way, kind of playing devil's advocate here, you know, for cities like Bloomington and West Lafayette, will those savings pass down to tenants that, you know, limiting that type of fee that cities are charging rental companies that may in turn actually help affordable housing?
Well, I guess you could, I don't know if the savings will be passed on.
Right.
If they're not paying $95 every 3 years for an inspection fee, how much is that per month? Less than $2 a month? No, two or three bucks a month, I guess, that they're not paying. I don't know what they'll do with that money. What I do know is it means we have less ability. If we were to not able to do this inspection, it would mean we would have more unsafe apartments. We would have apartments that didn't have working smoking detectors. We would have apartments that didn't have egress for emergencies. We would have apartments that had electrical problems and could cause fires. It would be a great concern to me. I mean, being devil's advocate, you could say, well, why should we have fire standards for our buildings? That would be cheaper. But we believe in public safety, that's really important.
But then it would force you to look into other funds to fund that.
We would have to go to the general fund, which means the general taxpayers are paying to protect the safety of these apartment buildings.
I wanted to, this kind of goes along with the 4th Street garage per se too, when we're talking about money and funds and where that comes from. Now the city council is heading back to talk about whether or not to now demolish the 4th Street garage. That was your original, what you wanted, correct, when we talked about this a few months ago?
Yes, the city, as we looked at it and had a lot of expert advice, we felt that garage, which was nearly 40 years old, was, as we were told by engineers, one, it's unsafe right now. Two, it's very difficult to repair in any length of time, and that the replacement schedule made sense. So that's what we advocated to the council. They didn't agree with that first, but they've now come back and are looking at it again. I'm glad they are. I hope they come around on that. Look, it's no fun to have a garage that's failing, that needs replacement, but we think that's the prudent thing to do. The new garage, by the way, will allow us to do some things like put in public restrooms, put in charging stations, put in a convertible floor on the first floor that can have retail in it, it can be a much, much better garage, much greener, and serve the city for another 50 years. But it costs money, but we believe it's the right thing to do to replace it. Because, well, we have 8,500 parking places downtown, And I want to do, as many people do, as much as we can to reduce the need for those parking places. But even if we get rid of half of them, if we improve our public transit, improve mobility, the garages are the last ones we're going to want to get rid of, because those are the most efficient use of space. It would let us redevelop into affordable housing and other uses, office buildings, other properties.
But there are two different ways that this would be funded. If mm-hmm. it was a new garage, that would be a bond.
That's correct.
If it's being fixed, that just comes out of whatever you can find money for the general fund.
That's
is that right?
Right. Well,
per se?
Yeah, and again, I mean, I hate to harp on this, but you know why that is? State law. We don't have fiscal home rule. We're not allowed to use monies that make sense to us. So the tax increment finance money, which you can use to rebuild a garage, to build a new garage, you are not allowed under state law to use to repair a garage. Now, don't ask me how smart it is to say you can use this money to build. It'd be like saying you can use this money to build your house, but you got to find a different source of money to put a new roof on or repair your house. So it does require different sources of money, and it's difficult because we need to repair two other garages that we have as well.
Mm-hmm. We are doing Facebook Live. Feel free to send a question or a comment. We do have something here from Heather. Not sure, Heather, what you mean. I'll ask, and maybe you know what she's referring to. She said, ask, will there be a blowing up of a hill off of 17th Street? So is there some construction going on or something happening on 17th?
Well, blowing up a hill sounds very dramatic. So
yes.
I don't want to
Heather,
jump
you might
on
need
that,
to but there is, elaborate there, on
there
that
is.
Question.
I don't think I want to blow up any hill, but 17th Street is being improved, widened, as you've probably seen. Of course, there's an overpass over 69, and there's a new junior high that's being built soon at Tri-North, which is going to front on 17th Street, kind of down the hill. So I wonder if she's talking about losing that snow hill, because that's a favorite snow hill. And I'm afraid MCCSC, the school system, has decided to put Tri-North, the new one, down on 17th Street, which will mean that old snow hill will kind of go away. 17th Street itself is going to be improved with trails and side paths and such. But if that's not the answer, please contact my office and we'll try to get you any information we can.
Let's follow up with the State of the City address last month. You had a big announcement about a new task force that would convert compostable organic material at the city's wastewater plant and convert that into compressed natural gas to fuel public vehicles. You did say that this is complex and expensive. So what do you know about this, though, that this would be feasible here in Bloomington?
Well, so yeah, so let's take a moment. So there's kind of three factors that are at play. Number one, we need to expand our wastewater plant on the south side. Our largest wastewater plant is approaching capacity. We don't see the need for that slackening. And so we know we need to improve and expand the Dillman wastewater plant on the south side. There are two ways to do it. One way, you can just expand what we have. Another way is to switch to called anaerobic digestion, which means you use a process without air to digest the sewage that comes into that plant. That's going to cost a lot of money. Switching to anaerobic costs more money. But here's the good thing. Here, let me tell you the other two things that are going on at the same time. Number two is we just had a study completed and found out that 40% of the trash, the landfilled material from our county, is compostable, meaning it can be turned into soil, it can be reused. Half of that is food and half of that is other things like paper and cardboard and that stuff. So a lot, that's 100 tons a day that we're putting in a landfill that could be composted. The third fact is, in our city, we buy about 500,000 gallons of diesel and gasoline fuel every year to run the Bloomington Transit System, our snow plows, our sanitation trucks, our utility trucks. Now the interesting thing about that trio of facts is, if we create anaerobic digestion in the wastewater plant, it likes to be fed compostable material. So not only the sewage does it do a good job of cleaning up, but it actually likes to be fed more organic material, and it turns it into compressed natural gas. The natural process of digesting it creates methane. That methane is the same material that can run buses, trucks, on our streets. So what we're going to study, and this is not new, other cities have done this in varying ways, but we're going to look at, can we invest in the wastewater plant in a way that would use the food stock, the compostables, to turn it into fuel that would then run our buses, our sanitation system, and other things. It's complicated because each of those three systems needs to work. Just give you one example. We would probably want to work closely with IU to say, you're a big source of compostable food waste with the people living there and all that you do. Would you be interested in steering that away from a landfill and sending it to the wastewater plant? Similar with some of the big employers like the hospital or Cook or others. We need to talk to the bus system and say, you really have a choice going forward. Do you want electric buses or do you want compressed natural gas buses? Because if you're doing electric buses, then you don't need this compressed natural gas. So all those decisions have to be made. And what I wanted to do is get a bunch of people in a room evaluating whether we can make it work. If we can make it work, and I'm sorry I'm going on so long about it, but it's, if we can make it work, then what it means is we really are creating a very resilient system in our community that is generating the energy we need to move vehicles around by waste that otherwise would have gone into a landfill. We're capturing carbon that otherwise would go into the atmosphere and turning it into a kind of a nice cycle of a system.
Well, and at least here in the newsroom or with me, we've covered for years, and I don't know how much you've read about the Terre Haute wastewater sludge to diesel fuel that they were trying to work out with a company in California that ended nothing up with just court and
didn't
court
work.
Hearings and didn't work. And so it was interesting to hear this as something new. But of course, my example is not a good example.
Not a good one. Well, you got to be careful. You got to study it. You got to really look at it. That's why I'm excited about the possibility, but it does involve tens of millions of dollars of investment from these different systems, and it involves complicated new systems. Now, I'm glad we have a new sanitation system that's worked really well, I think, to do this pickup. But that's easy compared to what this will require. But it's the right thing to look at, and it would solve three things at once, improve our community in these three ways. You know, better fuels that would be really renewable fuels, better disposition of our waste that we're otherwise landfilling, and an improvement of our wastewater plant, which we know we need to do.
We're doing Ask the Mayor live. We will still have the recorded version tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, on WFIU. We're trying something a little different today, and we'd love for you to submit your question. Let's move on to, I believe, the court date for the annexation is coming up at the end of the month. Is that true?
The court hearing
or
for
hearing.
The
there's
yes, a court there's a hearing this week, I think.
Okay.
Actually, Joe, I'm sorry, I don't know the exact
yeah.
date, but it's of course it's a public hearing. If anybody wants to go, all our
yeah.
court proceedings are public, and yeah. that will be the judge hearing arguments from both sides. It's not a. It's I think it's called. I think it's a summary judgment hearing. There's not a lot of facts in mm-hmm. dispute, so there's not a lot of witnesses or anything. It's
right.
really just arguing, was this legal,
right.
what the state did or not? And the judge will hold a hearing this week, and then I assume will take weeks or months to decide it, and then we'll get a result out of that. We hope he concludes, as we believe, that the action of the state legislature was not consistent with the Indiana Constitution, but we'll find out in a little while.
So is this kind of like the your one time to prove your case?
It is the trial court time.
Yeah.
We've had briefings back and forth for quite a while. There have been discovery depositions and all. They took my deposition in this and a number of other folks. And then this is the judge hearing the trial court level. Once he rules, Judge Nardi, I believe, has the case, then either of the losing sides has the chance to go to appeal. But this is really the trial court decision. So,
is there still, I mean, anything you wish you would have done differently throughout this whole process for the annexation?
Well, I think maybe one thing we didn't explain as well as we should have at the beginning was the state is very specific about how you have to do annexation processes. And you have to start your process with the largest possible map. You can't start an annexation and then say, hey, you know, as we talked and looked at it, we think we should add this area, or we think we should expand this or that way. That you cannot do that. You have to start with the largest possible map and then determine if the boundary should be shrunk or some part should be left out. I think maybe we didn't explain that as well as we should have. I regret that Bloomington didn't annex for 15 years because we had this big kind of pressure in the bubble to release and to figure out. But I still think it's the right thing for the city. The city has annexed for 185 years of our 200-year history. we're growing. We have urbanized areas that were meant to be annexed. We have lots of developments that were provided sewer with the agreement that they would be annexed in the future, and it just is a way to provide densely populated areas. They need good fire service. They need good police coverage. They need sanitation services. They need sidewalks. They need parks, all the things that the city provides. And I do think it's the right thing to do. And I regret that, the main regret is that the state legislature, in what we think was an illegal way, stepped in and stopped a process only halfway through, where the public was deciding, where do we want our boundaries to be?
We just have a few more minutes, but we still have a few more questions, so we'll try and get to these. And of course, you can still be part of this conversation here with Ask the Mayor, with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. Any status update on the redevelopment project of the old hospital site?
So, the place the hospital is now, the current hospital site, 2nd and Rogers, there will be a lot of activity on there, probably kind of the latter half of this year. So the hospital, of course, is going to operate there for the next 2 or 3 years till the new one is built on the east side. We will be beginning probably the latter half of this year, 2019, with a very public process to say, what do we want to do with these 24 acres when they become available? I'm very pleased that we were able with IU Health to buy that property, because that lets the city and our community decide what do we want to see there. So what will begin later this year is a very public kind of planning process to say, we have the Urban Land Institute, which did this kind of first look, but the community needs to roll up our sleeves and dig in and say, this is a huge opportunity, 24 acres downtown. What do we want it to look like? What do we want the physical place to look like? Who do we want to be there? Do we want housing, affordable housing? I'm committed to a lot of affordable housing there. Do we want community centers? Do we want office buildings? Do we keep the garage that's there, the parking garage, and other things like that? So right now it's kind of like the convention center. You know, we worked on it for 2 years before it became pretty visible. We're in that earlier stage of working with a big steering group, but the public will start to see a lot of this the latter half of this year.
And we have a portal called Inquire Indiana where people can write in questions. So it wasn't necessarily directed to Ask the Mayor, but I thought it was a good question. Okay. How does the city preserve its longtime character with the need to have more housing? So for example, Rhinos is an example of one of those iconic areas that's being torn down, but yet housing is needed. So how does a city deal with that?
Carefully, yeah. And with a lot of discussion. You know, I remind all of us and myself that there was never a period of time when Bloomington didn't change. We're 200 years old. Every year Bloomington has changed, and it will continue to change. People want to live in Bloomington, and it is not time to lift the ladder up and say nobody else is coming to Bloomington. We need to continue to be a community that welcomes people, includes people. For goodness sake, in this time in our nation's history and what's going on, I feel it's more powerful and more important than ever to remind all of us we need to be a welcoming, inclusive community. And that means our doors are open for people to join us in the community. That means we need to think about where are people going to live, both inside the city limits and outside the city limits. But it also means we have to be careful to preserve what's important about Bloomington. We care about the look of our downtown. We care about our neighborhoods. Each neighborhood has a feel and an ambiance. But I do have to remind us that feel and that ambiance came through change. Every neighborhood in this community has changed from its beginning and will continue to change. And that's a lot of dialogue. It's the comprehensive master plan and zoning. And we've had, I think, 60 meetings on zoning, and we'll keep looking at how that changes. But it's the community debate and dialogue about how do we preserve what we love, protect what we love about Bloomington, but not close the doors for others. Mm-hmm. And making sure that we're affordable for others. So that's something I work really hard on every day.
Let me ask you that really quick, because you mentioned about planning. The city is in the process of hosting a sixth round of public meeting about the Unified Development Ordinance, which we've been known as the UDO.
Yeah.
What's next in that process?
So there will be, we're going to be coming out with a full draft of that zoning code, which is 400 something pages long, really long, to deal with all these issues. The Plan Commission and the City Council, in turn, each has to review that code. That's going to be a long process, a lot of public input at each level of that to look at things. For example, in this new code, and I'm glad it's in there, there's a lot of details to work out. In this new code, we're going to have serious incentives for affordable housing. Basically, let you build a taller building if you put affordable housing than if you don't. Now, we got to make sure all the buildings are appropriate and help our community be better. But the zoning code will say, if you're not going to do any affordable housing, maybe you only get to go 3 stories or 4 stories. But if you will do affordable housing in this project, you can go taller. Or if you do it green, you can go a half story taller. So there's a lot of values that are baked into a zoning code. And that debate's going to happen again at the Plan Commission and at the City Council over the next year, I would say.
And that's when people can go and give their...
They can, though they also can go online right now. And through neighborhood associations or individually, you can go through the city website and make comments on the UDO, what you care about, what you want to see there.
Wendy wants to know, does the City of Bloomington have a cross-connection control device auditor?
You know, I don't know what that is. Is it for water? Maybe water pipes? Cross-connection control device monitor.
Feel free to update, because I'll go to one more question and we'll come back to that and see what that is.
We can look it up if we can't find
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a budgetary thing or not, but we'll see. I did wanted to maybe kind of wrap up with the scooters. Right now with temporary ordinances are in effect, but we're seeing cities like West Lafayette jump in with more permanent type of regulations, and you were asking for public input on that.
Yeah.
Is that still the process you're in right now?
Yes, and we've gotten a lot. We did, as you mentioned, we did an interim step where we made agreements with the scooter companies to perform in certain ways, to give payment to help monitor what they do. Speed and other thing controls, but we always felt, and what's coming soon is a city council ordinance. We're developing that ordinance with the council and with input from lots of people, health professionals and people who ride scooters, people who don't ride scooters. I think we've had hundreds of comments online about that. And soon, I think later in March and in April, the city council will be reviewing a potential ordinance to kind of put into law the regulations and approaches that we want with the scooters.
Wendy wrote back, she goes, yes, it is for the potable drinking water for backflow.
I guessed right. thank you, Wendy. That's a great question. We actually are installing, and this is pretty technical, and I may not get it all right, but we're happy to follow up. We are putting in place cross-connection devices that protect against contamination of potable water. Some people access at a fire hydrant or other places, pull water out of the system, but we want to make sure that when they pull that water out, there's no cross-contamination back into the system. And we didn't have enough of those devices, and we're putting those in, and we'll require that people do that. It's another way to protect our water system.
Okay. That's all the time that we have for today, but I want to ask if you have any, like I always do, any big announcements or anything that we need to know.
No, I think, I would say some of you may have gotten a city survey in the mail. We have our city survey going out right now, and we encourage everybody who got it. I think we mailed to 3,000 households. Please do return your city survey. We take it very seriously. It's very helpful for us to get that feedback, and we always welcome new ideas and new feedback, and thanks so much. This seemed to work okay.
I think so.
Thanks for trying this. Yeah.
Thank you for coming to our house this time.
You bet.
Thank you for watching Ask the Mayor on WFIU.